this a land with liberty and justice for all?
No!
Is this one nation indivisible under God?
No!
Either let us practice the democracy we are preaching or shut up!
Well, how about that? Insightful words from the late Adam Clayton Powell Jr. You know, the thrill is gone, as we just heard from Tracy Chapman and B.B. King. The thrill is gone for most of us about the prospect of elections and what it all means, because the truth has been revealed so many times. This is almost an exercise in futility, because the governments that we get out of this whole exercise is a renegade government. They're not listening to what we have to say. They don't really care to know what we have to say. Elections have become merely a perfunctory matter of putting people officially in predetermined cogs in a very big wheel that rolls at its own pace and with its own aim and objective. It's a club. And it is no longer government by the people for the people. It is government isolated from and insulated against the people. It's a renegade government. And we've had a series of renegade governments. So when we stack that up against the democratic ideals that we're told about all the time, land of the free, home of the brave, as Adam Clayton Powell just said, we either get to the business of practicing democracy or shut up. And I think that's where we are. Certainly that's where I am. I've been there for quite a while. I told you a story some time ago about having an epiphany in the voting booth more than a decade ago that I will not vote unless and until there is a compelling reason to vote. And I haven't found one since that time until now. There's been no compelling reason to vote. I did say also that that included the ostensibly historic moment of electing the nation's first African-American president and then re-electing him in 2012. I opted out of both because I determined early that he was not a compelling reason to vote. His actions betrayed very early to me what he was all about. He was a packaged marketing phenomenon and very little else. Great symbolism, but there was no substance there to that candidacy, and it turns out to the presidency of Barack Obama. So where we are as a nation is, again, repeating the same self-defeating exercise from my point of view of going through this motion of midterm elections, the prelude to the even greater circus in 2016, which is the presidential election in which history is going to be made. The prediction is we shall have the first woman president. And it's all but ordained. I beg to differ. But I think the question now comes to our communities, our various communities, and dealing head on with the uncomfortable contradictions that have been hanging around unresolved all these years. We have yet another opportunity, although to my mind, the window is closing on the opportunity to do something truly progressive, truly meaningful, truly democratic. It's a foregone conclusion, I think, that the Republican-Democratic duopoly will dominate the political choices of most voters in this midterm election, and more than likely also in the 2016 presidential election. But that window of opportunity that I just referred to is about the willingness, if there is willingness, to really deal with issues as they are. And this time of crisis, and I believe we are in the midst of a crisis politically, economically, socially, we are in a crisis situation. The opportunity nonetheless exists for new approaches to political activism and movements. But in order for these things to occur, we first have to have some conversations with ourselves, within our own specific communities, and with each other, if we are to even maintain that it is possible to have coalitions, political coalitions that share objectives and therefore can make quite a bit of difference in pooling their political power. Specifically, let me start with the communities of color, because they are literally the most oppressed in this society. By now, we should have seen, and I'm not being dogmatic here, I'm not wagging the finger of blame, we're just looking at the situation as it is. By now, it should have become abundantly clear in these communities, and indications are that this is happening, that the political system has simply not been useful to the unique interests and priorities within these communities. The unique circumstances of day-to-day life, all aspects of day-to-day life, employment, education, safety, food security, housing, and so forth. Situation is beyond critical. It is, in my view, in meltdown. We don't see the requisite response in the established leadership, so it means that the leadership has to be grown organically, even though it is frustrating that we've gone through these cycles time and again, but that's life. We just have to suck it up and understand that that too is what life is all about. Life is not about having everything line up in a row. It's not a perfect situation. It's not well synchronized. It's chaotic most of the time. And the challenges in making some kind of order out of the chaos that we live with every single day. The leadership, for the most part, is a failure. We have to just accept that. And they're a failure because they have bought into the very system that oppresses. They're part and parcel of it. Therefore, they cannot distance themselves from it in order to be of true service, meaningful service to their distressed communities. But we still have not done the business of creating new leadership. We still have not done the business of addressing these needs ourselves. We still have to find ourselves guilty of arrogating to the system that oppresses responsibility for our freedom, liberation, and equality, and justice, which is insane. I mean, on a logical level, it just does not compute. So there is an absence of established leadership, effective established leadership, and there also is an absence of homegrown, organic leadership. We have to get busy, if at all we mean to survive as a community. We have seen the dire consequences of not paying attention to this, and that is our communities are in shambles. Everything is wrong, and everything is urgently wrong. So the need exists for an immediate remedy to this situation, and it could only come from people organizing within their own communities, themselves taking personal responsibility for the well-being of the community. That's the only solution, which means you have to put in place mechanisms that help you do just that. You have to create your own structures. You have to create your own leadership. You have to create your own vision and your own power base. You have to do that yourself. If you leave that responsibility to others, you will get what you've been getting. We have to undertake massive consciousness raising. Because people simply, this is part and parcel of being oppressed. Your mind is so dissipated because you have to deal with so many things in order to just simply survive from day to day. Your attention is drawn in 400 different places all at the same time. Your energy is dissipated. Your concentration is dissipated because survival is literally minute-to-minute business. But somewhere we have to have a commitment that says, I am not going to be afraid of the choices we have to make, and I'm not going to postpone this any further. I'm not going to do it because we are seeing all these stories we've been talking about for so long pointing to the rapid now. They've actually sped it up. The demise of our communities through mass incarceration, through police brutality and control and excessive force, through the purposeful denial of tax-levied services to these communities, through racist policies, through a determination, literally, that is genocidal, if not in effect, certainly in intent. The idea is to literally destroy communities, not just physically, but literally to get rid of undesirable people. We're seeing it taking shape in broad daylight in Michigan at a scale that we haven't seen, in several decades. And that's why we've been talking about Detroit and Benton Harbor and Pontiac and Flint. And Belle Isle and other communities in Michigan systematically being emptied. It is happening in New York City. It is happening in every urban center because urban centers are the places where you find mostly large populations of people of color, blacks and Latinos. We have the year 2043 around the corner. It is when the Bureau of the Census says the country would have gone through a seismic demographic shift, becoming a majority non-white nation. 11% of U.S. counties have already gone that way, and 5 states already are majority non-white. So the 2043 forecast may be actually earlier than we think. If, without that shift as the backdrop, we are experiencing this level of oppression, imagine what will happen when it does occur. And what we are experiencing is a prelude, a precursor of what will happen. The lines of demarcation will become rigid, more rigid than ever. We will have racism unabated, because now there is going to be a fight, not just for because of the numerical disadvantage, but because it implies also a diminution of power. And the whole society, from the word go, as organized, has been about the domination of one group over another, over all others. The imminent threat of that being radically altered is going to cause massive reaction, negative fallout, and we not hearing the conversations that ought to be taking place right now, and more so, more significantly, in the so-called progressive community. We're hearing all kinds of ideas about what the priorities are, and the historic priorities of this country, which is the eradication, the absolute eradication of race and race oppression in this country, in order to achieve some semblance of justice and equality and freedom. We are not hearing that from the progressive community, the white progressive community. The humanization of American society has always fallen on the oppressed. Their struggles, their deaths, their deprivations have always been the driving force for creating humanistic changes in our society. We've got to stop that. Because we have to insist now that the conversation become very open and very blunt. The question is that our society, if we are to progress, requires direct input from those who say they are progressive. We can't leave it up to chance, and we can't leave it up to, that's just supposing that they mean well. We have to now hear the articulation of that. We now have to hear the commitment to that, and we're not hearing it. And this is because, and this is, I'm wagging a finger now, I'm wagging a finger of blame. This is because, in my view, the progressive community has retreated into its bunker of racial privilege, and it has punked out, because it now turns its attention to all kinds of other issues, which are very important, but will not publicly commit to eradicating this society of the most pernicious and the foundational problem, which is that this society is predicated on white supremacy. It has taken a leave of absence from that issue altogether. It differs from the establishment on a number of other issues, but it silently and tacitly does not challenge at all the standing order of white supremacy in this country. It's time for no frills, no thrills democracy. Don't tell me that the issue is X when I tell you the issue is Y. To insist that I must believe that the issue is X when I know the issue is Y for me, we now have to have discussions about how or whether you agree or whether you support my struggle with the issue being Y, even though you insist the issue is X. If we can't have those conversations, we need to get it said now that we will go our separate ways. I will take care of my strictly the needs that are strictly important to my community. And we will, you know, be nice to each other on the street, but basically I will have no use for you. You're not really important in my struggle. Therefore, you're not important. We'll have to have those conversations now. The progressive community has retreated, plain and simple. The oppressed communities have imploded under the heavy weight of their oppression, which in large measure conditions you to literally kill yourself, to work against your interests, or not work at all. And this is why it is disturbing that at this time, from the progressive community as a whole, we're not hearing and we're not seeing evidence of a consciousness that goes beyond their narrowly defined interests. And it is very disturbing. I refer time and again to Elizabeth Warren, a person who, by all definition, is a progressive person, but absolutely never discusses the issue of race at all. And yet it is so central to everything that is wrong in America on every level. Gary just finished talking with a guest about ways, the myriad ways in which the black vote is being annihilated. And this is not just, you know, an incidental issue. It is everywhere. In every black community, every black vote is under attack. It's a state crime. This is a crime. We had Professor DeHaven Smith on with us some time ago talking about state crimes against democracy. This is what we are experiencing and have been. So when people talk very wistfully, very emotionally about the Voting Rights Act and the value of the vote, they never talk about the intricate plans made to absolutely erode, attack, and annihilate the vote. With the attainment of the vote is the large order being implemented to absolutely annihilate it, and with great success, because the system, even when it is headed by an African American, is so powerful that it resists just about every effort to restore justice. It is impossible to do. So that communities that are oppressed literally could use the help of enlightened people outside who understand it is not just you're helping Latinos or you're helping African Americans or you're helping Native Americans. No, you are helping society. You're creating a more just society by doing your job in line with the ideology you profess. But it is very irritating to me that we are constantly avoiding this discussion. And we do not hold the progressive community to account for its own racism. By selectively deciding they will not address the issue of race as central to the American political question, the American social question, the American economic question. The time has come for no frills, no thrills democracy. Everybody has got to account. We either have friends or we don't. You're either committed or you're not. No middle ground here. The labor movement needs to articulate this as a principle, a central principle in the labor union movement, if it is to be relevant. And if not, it should be written off. Which is what I say about the Democratic Party. All these years of support, and you have no way of proving consistent support for this concept of equality and justice and freedom, write you off. You have no use. There's no reason to support a party that does not respect the critical issues that pertain to your everyday life and in which you make humongous investments. You're getting no yield on that investment. You cancel it. You write it off. Do something else. These are the questions we have to have explored, and we need answers. Midterm elections, this is the time to do it. We are either going to grow up, mature, and have some really important and strategic discussions, or we go our separate ways and stop this dance, this illusion that we are actually stretching hands across the great divide. Time to end all of that nonsense. The community has to wake up about the state of its oppression. It has to wake up to the fact that the agents of oppression very much look like them. They've bought into self-annihilation in service of white supremacy. They betray the interests of their own community every single day for the illusory reward of status and profile and a few ducats. They prostitute themselves and in turn out their community as well, put them on the auction block. These people have to be outed, castigated, and cast aside. That's a job for the community to do. It is silly, I think, to waste time into believing that you will, you know, there's hope for people to be different. There's hope the Democratic Party will be different. And the Democratic Party is at least better than the Republicans. No, it's not. It's a matter of both parties may have spats. I just wrote a listener with this in mind. They may have spats with each other. But they both agree that they are entitled to control every aspect of your life. So this time of year, I would say don't even worry about these elections. The elections will go on, and they'll go on the way they always have. But let this time be the time to wake up our political consciousness and our resolve to take charge of these issues that have gone unresolved for so long, but having devastating effect and consequence in our lives, more so some than others. But the challenge I'm speaking about today is directed at the progressive community, the yawning contradictions within it, the African and Latino communities particularly, that have decided to punk out on itself, that they will not do what they need to do in order to secure their interests and to safeguard their turf and their future. And between and among these communities, we need to have a recalibration of our relationship. What is it going to be? What is that supposed to be? What are the benefits of dealing with each other? Should we deal with each other? Do we have reason to deal with each other? And on what terms? What are you bringing? What do you want? These are the questions we need to have answered. And we need to have them raised in order to have them answered. Within the communities, we also need to have these discussions. What are we about? How do we measure up against the yeoman sacrifices of those people who went before us? How do we account for ourselves against the maps, the plans, the suggestions, the ideas laid out for us so that we can implement them and improve our condition? How do we account for ourselves with respect to that? I often say that the African American community in particular doesn't need anything more. It has all it needs to rectify many things that are plaguing it. We have all kinds of economic plans. We have all kinds of political strategies. We have all kinds of ideologies available. We have all kinds of directives that are written. They're put in books. We have all kinds of prototypes available. Pick one. Who is reading these things? Who is paying attention to them? Who is honoring these gifts, this legacy? By saying, here, you don't like Marcus Garvey's approach? Here is Du Bois's approach. You don't like Du Bois? Here's Hubert Harrison. You don't like Hubert Harrison? Here's C.L.R. James. Here's what they saw. Here's what they thought could work. And in some cases, here's what they did make work. Are we honoring these things? Do we value these guidelines and these missives and these directives? No. No. We disrespect them. We ignore them. We don't even care to know them. But somehow we think the answer is supposed to come from someplace else. The answers are there. After great suffering and sacrifice and deep thought, they have been put down on paper. Take your pick. Make something work. You don't like any of them? Take a little bit of each and fashion your own. But where do we see replication of these ideas that are readily available and have been for a long, long time? What are we waiting for? What Messiah are we waiting for? And what has to happen before we realize that the thing we're waiting for is right here, within our midst, existing for decades, centuries even, plans that are perfectly doable, feasible, and achievable? The progressive community, taking its, I should say, we could go go back to just the 60s, the most recent reference I will start, recognizing that our society is out of kilter, that it is in fact a horrible way to live in a society that has rules set up so that no matter how hard one group or another tries, they will never make it, because there are all kinds of things that countermand their efforts, that frustrate their efforts, that annihilate their efforts. There was a time when people said, this is wrong. This is an unjust society, and we are dedicated to justice. We are dedicated to justice. But now, what do we see? Justice has been redefined. Suddenly, it appears, if we were to go by the progressive community, racism has been solved. The issue is climate change. The issue is fracking. The issue is environmentalism. But racism does not exist anywhere. And yet, it is the American problem. Labor has taken the position that it is about minimum wage increases and it is about working conditions. It refuses to recognize racism as the American problem. It is the American problem. And so there has been an astute avoidance of it. And yet at every single level, it pops up as the central issue. Still unresolved, still undone. So, I say, again, it's long past due for some no-frills, no-thrills democracy. This is very, very unsexy work. It's hard, unglamorous, tedious, and scary, because we have to start with the truth of things. It's very ugly. The truth of things is that we've all gone back into our bunkers. And in a very strange way, it is actually a surrender to the establishment. We'll give you that, and we'll go on with other things. We'll give you your absolute triumph in organizing this crazy society this way, in putting in place all these nefarious ways to create division and poverty and injustice at every turn. There's something that is always an impediment to the predictable groups. But we'll forgive you that. We'll look beyond that and move on to something else. So we'll talk about the Voting Rights Act, but not racism. We'll talk about the need for better schools, but not racism. We'll talk about meaningful employment, but not racism. We'll talk about the need for, you know, a better kind of community. We should be able to live in certain communities, but we're not talking about racism. We'll talk about the need for voting, but we'll not talk about racism. And that is the big American dilemma, the big American flaw, the big American conspiracy. And everybody has retreated to the bunker on this question. We'll talk about everything else, we'll disguise the problem in all kinds of ways. We just will not talk about it. We'll not talk about how we have aided and abetted it by refusing to confront it head on, take it on, eradicate it, commit to the eradication of racism in this country. We could talk about committing to eradicating carbon emissions in the world, but we can't deal with the question of racism in this country. And it is on this pattern devised within the United States that has had global impact, because many other countries adopted this method of race oppression. So that by tackling it here, head on, you give incentive for a global effect. Because it is at the root of a lot of global problems. But we manage always to ignore that too. I know I sound a little bit somber today, but I decided that the time has come. We have to have these conversations. And we have to be prepared to make some hard choices. You're either my friend or you're not. You're either in my corner or you're not. I could either depend on you or I won't. You're either relevant to my existence or you're not. We don't have to dress it up. We don't have to avoid the conversation. This is the conversation. You either are true to what you say or you're not. We're either ready or we're not. We're either willing or we're not. See, there's no middle ground now. There's no middle ground. Our leaders are either true and effective or they're not. No, there's no need to pussyfoot around anything anymore. Get it done. Get it said. Get it basically identified. Let's understand where we are. Let's understand where we are with ourselves. Let's understand where we are with each other. And move on from there with respect to our interests. You know, back in the 60s, people used to say there is a certain level of integrity to the Klan. And that is, they're not excusing and they're not hiding what they're about. You know where you stand. And there's a certain amount of integrity to that. They're a bunch of hateful miscreants. But it is important that they're not hiding it. We have wasted so much time dealing with each other on the basis of all of these hidden agendas and attitudes, where we don't quite know where we are with each other or what we stand for, even within our own communities. Who is who? Who can be trusted and who is not to be trusted? Who is useful and who is not to the aggregate aims and objectives of our community and the interests of our community? Who is our friend? Who is our enemy? Let's get clear about these things. And stop waffling. Let's get real clear. And that's essentially my thought today. I thought about this because I saw, you know, the pattern emerging a long time ago But for some reason here at this particular time, in this historical moment, in this chronological moment, I see us getting into a repeat pattern. And it should be avoided at all costs. Because really, given the level of oppression that our communities are experiencing, time is of the essence. And we need not waste time on things that are not going to help us. And as I say us, I mean all of us. It's not going to help us. It's not going to help the black community dealing with a progressive community that is fake. It is not going to help the progressive community dealing with the black community if it is fake. We have to have these things articulated. Where do we stand? What is the state of play? Do we have anything in common? Do we have any reason for collaboration? Do we have any reason to care about what you're doing, or do you have any reason to care about what I'm doing? Do we have any reason at all to think that we can actually come together on things that we agree upon to fight the system that is fighting us both? All these things, we have to have these discussions. And when I raise the question, what conversations ought we be having now? These are the conversations that we ought to be having now. We are mature people. We don't have to hide, nor do we have to excuse what it is we're about. But what is absolutely necessary, it seems to me, is clarity. We need to be real clear about what it is we're doing and where we are and what we have to do. So this is real political action time. And, you know, there's a choice here, too. You could either get on board or you can opt out. The most important thing from where I sit is that you can't say you didn't know, or it hadn't occurred to you, or the issue wasn't raised. I'm raising it. Look at the objective facts before us, and you can see the calamity that awaits us if we don't wake up and come to some realistic way of trying to approach these problems so as to head off the absolute disaster that is guaranteed in the not-too-distant future, predicated on the very thing that we have postponed discussing all these hundreds of years. It is the driving force for much of the policy that is made, not only domestically, but international policy. The time has come, I repeat, for no frills, no thrills democracy. This is hard work. It is uncomfortable. It's going to have edge to it. It's going to demand a level of maturity that we haven't seen in a long time. It's going to demand courage. It's going to demand integrity. It's going to demand everything we have got invested in the ideologies we say we cling to and the ideologies that we say we share, that we want a society, a just society, where freedom and equality exist. That comes as a result of roll up your sleeves, sit around a table, and get some things said. and get some discussions going and get a consciousness in tune with what the reality is. And that, my friends, is my message for you today. No more futzing around. No more pretending that we're all right with each other. We're not. No more we're in sync with the world. We're not. We are all in our bunkers because we have taken comfort there. We're safe in our suffering, in our deprivation. We're safe in our bunkers. Time to get out and deal with the question head on, because certainly the other side is already dealing with the answer. I want to thank you for allowing me to express these thoughts to you today. I hope in some way they have caused you or will cause you to reflect on what it is we need to do if we call ourselves activists and progressives and people with some evolved understanding about our roles as agents of change in a society that desperately needs it. If we are true to ourselves and true to what we see as our calling, we cannot avoid doing this work. As I sign off, I want to remind you, those of you who have been keeping abreast of this case, the Eric Garner case, tomorrow in Supreme Court in Staten Island is the trial of Ramsey Orta. He is the young man who took the video of Eric Garner as he was being choked to death by New York police officer Pantaleo and with other officers witnessing. There have been no arrests in this case, and the community, of course, is following. They had a preliminary hearing at the court, and tomorrow is the trial. And the trial relates to Ramsey Orta being charged right after this video surfaced with a gun possession charge and with other related charges. And it was a way of getting him out of circulation and under direct supervision of the police while incarcerated. And with him out of circulation, so will the video. The videotape will therefore not be admitted in the course of a trial with regard to the chokehold death of Eric Garner, because according to the law, the videographer will have to be available to testify that, yes, he took the video and he could affirm the contents of the video. With him out of circulation, the video would not, which is the critical piece of evidence in this case, will not be available. So tomorrow morning in court, that's at 18 Richmond Terrace in Staten Island, Richmond County Supreme Court, the trial begins at 9 o'clock. And in the same way that the community turned out in massive numbers in the previous hearing, so much so that they had to move to a larger court, they're hoping that the community again expresses its presence as a way of signaling to all concerned that this case will not be swept under the rug. As you know, I've had great criticisms here of the role of Reverend Sharpton in this case, who has abandoned Mr. Orta. And it was significant that at the pretrial hearing, the family of Eric Garner was in court supporting Ramsey Orta. So tomorrow at 9 o'clock in Richmond County Supreme Court, it's right across from where the Staten Island ferry will put you off. You take the number 4 or 5 train to Bowling Green or the number 1 to South Ferry, and you take the ferry across the river to Staten Island. It drops you off directly across from the Supreme Court building, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. For more information, you can call 917-947-8994. So with these remarks, I thank you very much for the pleasure and privilege of your company, and I mean that very much so today, because you allowed me to basically express myself to you in perhaps a brusque way, but you know it is sincere. Thank you, and we'll see each other tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday.